Hey everybody, Frank Cox here. I'm excited. It's happy hour. I happen to be in San Antonio right now in my hotel room, but I am well equipped. I got some Shinerbach with me. As whenever you're in Texas, you got to do what they do, you know, Shinerbach and Lone Star. That's what it's been the whole time. Not sure what else we're going to have, but I can tell you this. We got a cool cat on the show with us tonight. His name is Dustin Dixon. And for those of you guys that don't hang out on the Instagrams or may not ever heard of him, he builds some freaking cool stuff. He's a career welder and does a lot of pit building, some trailer building, and he builds some cool kitchen gadgets too. We're going to kind of talk to him about vintage pits and stuff, pit design, for just because I've seen some pits he does with these white wall tires and stuff, and they just look super cool. And I'm excited for this one tonight. But hey, real quick, hang in there and we're going to be right back. What's up, Dustin?
What's going on, Frank?
How you doing, man?
I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. I've been in this hotel room, the hotel all day today. So it's been a pretty easy day. I wasn't out in the shop. Guys, this is Dustin. And like I say, his handle there is at Mule Skinner Smoke Rigs. Tell us a little bit about Mule Skinner Smoke Rigs there, Dustin.
Pretty fresh to the smoker game. We started a page back last May, I believe. We're based out of Bristol, Texas, here just east of Ennis. We're about 30 minutes south of Dallas. And just intending to get some smokers out to the masses.
Yeah, that's cool. So I know that you you build smokers and stuff like that, but tell us about some of the other cool stuff, and then what your favorite styles of smokers is.
Okay, yeah, we build burger presses, we build attachments for onions to go on a grill cleaner or season the grill with. We sell planches, we sell live fire tables that roll around for your backyard or even your commercial restaurant. But our burger presses have been pretty big here lately. We've got a lot of people that want them. Got a friend of mine up in Wiley that really pushes them for us. His name's Josh Hunt, and he's got 40-something thousand followers on Instagram. So he loves our product and pushes it, and we have sold lots of burger presses. But we've also got wood racks and all different types of things on our website.
Yeah, just all the fun stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
So how long have you been around? Where are you now? And then how long have you been around there?
Where I'm at here currently?
Yeah. I think you said Ennis, Texas, yeah, down near there.
Yeah. Yeah. Bristol. This is my fifth address to live on since I was born. I've lived out of this town for about a year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah.
Lifelonger.
So, yeah. So recently, I believe you did a collaboration with MillScale on a pit. Tell us about that.
I did.
That was really cool.
Yeah. John bought that from, I've lost his name. I think he's at Dozier's down in Houston. Buchanan. Yeah. He had that pit, and John from Interstellar bought that. And I think the word is MillScale didn't have time to get him a trailer built. So John reached out. I saw him at an event at Matt Leon's Smoke Game Strong events and asked if I wanted to build a trailer. So we all just kind of jumped in together. And Brady over at Brisket Country put us some cool graphics to put on the tongue of it and went from there.
Yeah, that's super cool. Yeah, I love it. I love seeing, notable pit builders, throwing down together on builds and stuff like that. Well, guys, just so you know, as we're going here, pop comments and questions and things in the chat there. If you've got a question for Dustin, technical or just design or just anything, just pop it down in there and we'll do our best to answer it. One thing I really like about what you're doing is combining in live fire and, the burger presses and stuff like that, not just building pits. That's something I've never messed with is all the cool little things that you need to supplement, your builds and stuff. And so what kind of got you interested in throwing in on those other items?
We've always cooked on live fire, at Deer Lease or wherever. It just seems a lot. Takes you kind of back to the primal of a human being to cook with fire. It's just something that's always interested me and just caught my eye, and we just started rolling with it.
Yeah, I was looking at your burger presses, and they're not just a piece of plate that's cut out with a dang, right, you know, hook on it. I mean, they're nice. Tell me about your process on that. Do you forge those, or how do you make
them? I've got a guy that cuts my blanks out, and then I straighten one side of the horseshoe, and then I make an entry point on the hardwood handle and slip a brass pin in it. It's a tedious process, but it's a good look that we like, and I think the people are liking it too. So,
yeah, that's super cool. So tell me about how you got the name Mule Skinner.
All right. So my dad's been a truck driver my whole life, and his CB handle was Mule Skinner. So
that's cool.
I started a page called Mule Skinner Pack Rigs, which is what my LLC is. It's these little Overland trailers and stuff so that you can haul and camp and haul luggage. And it just kind of, we packed things. So it kind of Mule Skinner, that was his name. So we just brought it all together and went with it. It's a cool name. It's a unique name. And he's proud of it. He goes with me to all the barbecue events and hangs out with everybody. So he's getting to hang with some of these people. And he's got stage 4 prostate cancer right now. So the name means more, you know. I'm going to push this thing nationwide. We've sent presses to Alaska, up into the Northeast. Cool. It's getting crazy. And this is something I want to do with him as long as we can.
Yeah. So he helps you in the shop.
He does. He comes from time to time. He sits on the stool and does about like this right here and looks at everything, but he's got it figured out.
He's the coach.
Oh yeah. Yeah. He's there behind the scenes.
That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the barbecue scene where you're at. You know, I know I'm right down the street from Ernest's place, Burnt Bean. I'm super excited to go check that out. But tell me a little bit about the scene around where you're at. Who's there and what's happening?
Big one, Terry Black's and Deep Ellum in Dallas is one of my favorites. You got Slow Bone, which is over off Industrial, just west of downtown Dallas. We've got a couple joints here in town, local, nothing big named. We've got, there's lots over in Fort Worth. I'm not too far from Hurtado. He's in Arlington there. Let's see. You've got Panther City up there. You got Danes. You got quite a bit in the Metroplex, which is not too far for us to get to.
That's super cool. Yeah. I haven't spent enough time around there. I mean, I feel like I'm 8 hours from everywhere, you know, and I'm like 8 hours from Dallas too. And I need to spend more time there. Of course, I'll be there next weekend at the NBBQA, it's National Barbecue Association Conference. And I'm pretty excited for that. Nice. So what do you do by day? Tell me a little bit about that.
By day, we are in the metal construction industry. I work for DC Metal Construction Incorporated out of Ennis. We started out doing metal buildings, backyard type stuff, got into commercial builds, and now we are an industrial contractor mainly. We are going to roofing plants and all kinds of manufacturing plants and do their maintenance work. We build stairways, catwalks. We have a fab shop and everything.
So what do you your primary focus on your builds, like tell me a little bit about the kind of smoker you like to build. What kind of, feel you like for that? Like what is your favorite pit to build?
Favorite bit to build, the pit to build would be just the offset smoker. We'll do the 500s, the 250s. We've quoted some thousands. I've never built one. We do quite a few of the backyard units. And then oftentimes we'll get just some one-off air tanks or some type of a tank that we'll fabricate one out of just to kind of give it a one-off look. And people tend to like that. But mainly vintage, maybe raw material. I like to see the patina on everything. We'll clear coat, we'll linseed oil if it's, bare material. But I like to see the character of the tanks. I like to see their story. I like to know where they came from. I like to know what year they were made.
Absolutely. Yeah. Don't hide the history. Yeah.
No, I love it. I love all the multiple colors of paint and whatever comes with it.
some of them had 3-4 coats. You get them old enough, you know, and that kind of breaks up and makes some cool undertones and stuff.
I've got a 43 sitting out here right now, and it's got about six shades of gray on it. That's all flaked off. So I'm ready to get it built
out. That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So hinges and hardware and stuff like that. What do you like to involve in your builds for that kind of stuff?
I make everything by hand. The hinge wise, I use 9/16 rod and I bend everything to position, make them all match what I can. I used to hand cut my handle holders. Now I get those made with CNC and go with that. Mm-hmm. But I'm very old school. Don't have any kind of equipment. Everything's made by hand.
Mm-hmm. Cool. So you just was touching on equipment. I want to come back to that. But like for cooking grates and stuff like that, are you an expanded guy or a rod?
Yeah. Expanded metal. Yeah. Yeah. 3/4 flat expanded metal. Yeah.
That seems to be the most popular. I've been toying around with some round bar on some of my builds, and I think mostly just because some people like it, it's a little easier to clean, but it's definitely not cheaper.
I've had people reach out to stainless bars, and until I quote that out, they're like, nah, let's just go with the expanded metal.
Yeah, we'll just stay with the good old. Yeah. So let's talk about your trailers. I mean, the thing that pops out, I think, to most people and Bill Perkins here popped it in the chat. Like everybody digs those white walls and those caps, man. That's just super, super cool. What kind of deal is that? I've never used those.
Find a lot of them at Summit. They're an actual race. I mean, not a racing. They're a trailer tire, load range D white wall tire. I usually get my wheels and the baby moons together, which they have to be painted, which lets you do any color you want at that point.
Mm-hmm. So what's your favorite color on that?
I did my first build like a turquoise bluish type thing, but I actually sold that trailer. So I've got some ideas for a new one. I don't want to specifically say the color, but I've got some ideas. But the deep reds, the black, we did one for Texas Made Supply Company about a month ago. We did just black on it, and it pops just as much as any color does.
Yeah, that's super cool. You know, I noticed back in the day when MillScale was starting to use those rims and stuff, and that's when I first noticed them, and I was just like blown away. That's just so cool. But I'm not the guy to go out and start, you know, riding on the train too quick. You know, I want to let somebody have fun with it and kind of figure it out. I just never did go that way. I need to start doing fancy wheels because we've just always just done the good old, you know, good old fashioned trailer wheels. But, you know, so how do you feel about axle rating as far as trailers go? Like you've built a lot of pack rigs and things like that. Like for capacity, say you got a pit that weighs 2,000 pounds. What's your recommendation on the axle weight and stuff like that?
Well, so on the last 500 I built, I think it weighed in at about 3,500 pounds total. And I had 5,500 pound axles under it. So plenty to carry there. No issue at all. Mm-hmm. I would definitely say over by your weight on your axle just to make sure you're covered. Mm-hmm. Because if you start adding things, boxes, live fire, anything like that to it, over time, you're going to want that axle strength.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm definitely an overkill guy. We never could get 5,500s. You know, that we always had to get like 6,000 pound axles, you know.
Right, right.
So by the time we tandem those out, it's a 12,000 pound trailer. Yeah. And now that's overkill, I think, in some situations.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
Have you built any with double 500s yet?
Not yet. No doubles yet. No, only been doing singles. No.
Yeah. Tom did one here not long ago. We actually had to counterweight the tongue because there's just so, and it was tandems. I mean, you know, so. It's one of those deals where you can pull the tongue jack up and it doesn't move. The trailer just, you'd be off the ground and it's just got so much suspension there. You know, we just wanted to get some tongue weight down so it doesn't wag, you know?
Well, I've seen that too with some of the, with my firebox, I use a 3/8 thick pipe on the back and it adds so much weight beyond that back axle. Mm-hmm. That's why we tend to try to keep those live fires up front just to keep some front weight on.
Yeah. and some wood storage maybe.
Yes.
I was talking to somebody the other day and I was like, it's great to build wood storage up there, but if it's used as a counterweight, you got to keep it full of wood.
Yeah. Don't burn it all out.
Cause if don't burn it all out, go home empty and be like, get in trouble, you know?
Yeah.
What's your favorite style of coupler to use? Do you like those ones with the collar or do you like the other kind, the A-frame?
I've always liked the A-frame Bulldog coupler. They're a bit expensive. Mm-hmm. I found some of that same version, just a little bit cheaper, but I like that style. I don't like the old style pop over, even though you can pin it. My dad never liked using them. I never liked using them. So, something about grabbing that ball on the hitch just means a lot more to me.
Yeah. And holding it in place. Yeah.
Yes.
Uh-huh. So as far as like building a trailer, like, do you build it and lay it out and, get it all leveled up before you start fabbing anything? I mean, do you, how much work do you put into setup on building a trailer?
On a trailer, I lay out on jacks, my jack stands, get it built. I flip it over and I'm ready for tires and wheels at that point. Then I'll level everything out, get my smoker built where I want it, set it down. But yeah, I don't do a whole lot of, it doesn't stay in position while I put my smokers on it. I'll roll it out, load my smoker on, bring it back in, get everything situated like I want it. And then I attach it. I don't have a whole lot of space. I've got about a 25x25 shop that's full of junk on both sides. So I'm able to pull right through the middle. I had a 1,000 gallon backed in here the other day of a friend's, fixing some things on it. I can't build a 1,000 gallon in that shop. I could get the main chamber done, but I won't be able to get it on the trailer in there.
Yeah. So I call that pit builder-itis because we start accumulating things, you know,
right.
and it's just like, we don't want to let anything go. You know, I cut little pipe nipples off and they're threaded on one of them. Like, I can't throw that away. I might need it one day.
That stuff. Yep. That's third especially generation for that.
yeah. Got to keep that stuff. So tell me about your cooking experience. Like, do you go do competitions or anything? Are you gifted with cooking barbecue?
I love to cook barbecue. People like it. I don't do competition style. I've never been into that. I don't even know the process of it. I know it's a different style of cooking, but we're just traditional backyard briskets. We smoked a bunch of turkeys at Thanksgiving, put a post out and had people, if they wanted to bring a turkey by, I threw it on the smoker while I did the others and had a good turnout for that. We go to events. We just cooked the Come and Smoke It event last weekend. We did smash burgers, served 380 of them in 2 hours.
Wow.
And so your buddy Ryan Newland, he was there.
Yeah.
And
that's cool.
So, yeah. So we go to some events. We're going to be down at the Texas Dingers home opener down there in San Antonio, April 23rd, cooking for them. We're building a pit, a backyard style pit with a live fire attachment to it. And we're going to deliver that and cook for them that day.
Mm-hmm. So tell us a little bit about your live fire pits. You know, we talked about stick burners now and like, are they Santa Maria grill style or are they just an open pit?
I don't offer a Santa Maria just yet. I've got some interest in it, but there's some things I want to get mechanically right before I do that. I want something a little bit more hidden. I don't want to see all the cables and all that kind of stuff. I want it to be concealed. So what I offer right now is just a live fire table with a rack over the top to hang goods or whatever you want on it. Mm-hmm. And then the planches and everything, but yeah, everything just on a tabletop pretty much.
Yeah, that's cool. I've yet to start cooking that way. I've never really done a hanging everything kind of cook. I've done quite a bit of Santa Maria grill kind of cooks. And other than that, it's been pretty much just smoking and doing burgers and of course steaks and stuff. But
I'm really interested
to start getting into that.
Yeah, there's some other styles I want to get into with some of the hanging baskets for chicken and different type things that I don't know about. It's just going to take doing it, but that kind of stuff interests me. Like I said before, the primal type cooking, just heat on some meat and get it done.
Yeah, let's see. We got a okay. This guy's just saying he's enjoying the interviews. Yeah, I appreciate that. Thank you, Chuck. You know, so let's talk, guys. If you have any questions technically about what you'd like to hear, get them up here in the chat and we'll be covering those here directly. Tell me a little bit about your favorite way to finish. I mean, you said something about clear coat. Do you use linseed oil or any alternatives? How much prep do you put into it?
The linseed oil, yeah, I just warm everything up to 350 to 400 and I apply it with a rag. I've done some clear coating type stuff. KBS makes a product for clear coat. But I've even like on the small backyard units, I'll just buy a 2000 degree Rust-Oleum in a rattle can and apply that. And it gives it a really good look too.
So do you like more of a gloss or a satin? You think?
I like to see the gloss because it's going to dull out anyway a little bit as you start using it once it cooks in. But I like to see a little bit of the gloss. It kind of makes everything pop real well, especially if it's got a mill scale to your plate and you're not using the pickled and oil finish. It really gives it a good look.
Oh yeah, for sure. So do you leave the paint on the tank or you knock it off, you think?
I'll scrape. If it's got flakes on it, yeah, I'm going to scrape it off, but I'm not going to sit there and rip every bit of that down and take it down to material. No. Yeah.
Man, I feel sorry for some of those guys, man. I mean, cause they get them down and polish them, you know?
I mean, Moberg puts a finish on his, buddy.
He does.
You know, he takes it down.
Yeah. Tom just did one like that too for a guy in Korea. He's building a pit that's going out to a barbecue guy in Korea and 1,000 gallon. And man, it took him a few days. It's a freaking lot of work. And I mean, you could throw as much mechanical and stuff at it as you want. But it's a job to get an old tank down. Bones? Oh, go ahead. Yeah.
No, I said, I had messaged Sonny one day. They were polishing. I said, man, you must go through the Tiger disc. He said, yeah, about 20 a day.
20 a day. Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Well, I seen him haul in a load of 500s here a while back that was all there was all clean. They was like salvage. Looked like.
Oh, yeah.
So that's pretty cool.
Sandblasting. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So as far as like what was the other question I had just a second ago? I was going to ask you about bungs. Are you cutting bungs out on the tanks or do you leave them in?
I'm capping. I'm just capping everything off. Yeah.
Yeah. We started doing that too. And I'll tell you why is because we actually had some cookers with bigger doors and one door. You know, we did a cooker that was essentially one door. We call it split overlap. So one door's got to open.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The other does.
Yes.
And we cut those bungs out and that whole tank, I couldn't believe it. The tank twisted. It is the craziest thing I ever saw. And so we was just like, nope, we're just going to make a nice little cap on there.
Yeah. So the one I just did for Texas Made has a, I don't know, it's probably an 8-inch round on top. They had welded some kind of a neck on that tank. And I just capped the entire thing. I said, well, here you go. Here's a tortilla warmer or coffee warmer.
There you go.
Whatever. So we capped it and rolled with it.
Mm-hmm. For sure. So let's see here. Yeah, here's a shout out for Chuck. Iron Oak Barbecue Pits. I tell you what, you got to check out his stuff.
He's up in Vegas.
Really cool work. Yeah. He does a lot of fire pits and stuff. And, man, they're the berries. I love it.
He's got a unique Richards, look.
Yeah, Richard here has got a question. Have you ever bent square tubing or like radius, like rolled the corner? You ever done anything like that?
As far as arching some tubing, I guess.
Yeah.
I've got a buddy that's got a roller. We built one actually one time, but it doesn't do very good with tubing. It just mainly does plate. Now, I've done some real small, like 3/4 or 1/2 inch just by hand. Just put it in two pieces of pipe or whatever. Just kind of work the radius you want. But tubing tends to roll over as you make your radius.
Yeah. Yeah. I was talking to a friend of mine up the road here, 100 miles or so and from Rolla there. And he makes a lot of fire kettles is what he makes, John Pinnell. And he rolls tubing to go around for the footrest on there. And he uses a Halsfeld bender. But he's got like the legit one, you know, we can see those ones at Harbor Freight, you know, you know, Grizzly or whatever. But this one here is like a legit old Halsfeld bender. And man, he can make that just look perfect. I've never seen anything like it. But it's almost like you got to crush the walls a little bit, the side walls. Yeah.
You kind of got to crush the bottom portion of the tube to let it rest, let it go inside the other tube. And as it rolls around, Now, any of my any of my flat bars, like 2-inch flat or anything that I've made round pits for, like in the past, like the Cowboy cookers, that's all by hand for me. I just take I have a little jig with two pieces of pipe coming out, and I just sit there and work it by eyeball until I get it to the radius I want. And I've done that. I've done that hundreds of times. I mean, we build ladders at work that have cages around them, the OSHA cages, and we I've rolled every one of those by hand. We recently started getting them made, but some of those early ones, we rolled everything by hand.
Yeah, that's definitely a skill. Like angle iron too. You know, I was talking to John, and he actually makes some angle iron that he'll trim out. It's just he puts the leg out. You know, I always get my hands screwed up. He puts the leg out on the roll and rings it. And he, I think he's using one of those Hallsfell benders with a, like some kind of a adapter or something in there. You know, they, I didn't have enough time to really dive into it,
but that's
something that I, And it, and especially if you can make both ends match and not roll like you're talking about, you know, that's even better.
there's a custom shop out of Dallas that's rolled some for us in the past to do a tank radius, like a big 16 foot radius or wide tank. And they'll roll that 3-inch or 4-inch by quarter angle around there for us to weld it to it. And that's it. That's custom work right there. That's hard to do.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So, on the, I was going to ask about thermometers. What is your opinion on thermometers? Like for big dials, long probes, you know, placement, things like that. We always get a lot of questions about that.
I tend to buy the 4-inch Teltrues. I put some 2-inch on a build recently. Placement, I think you can get too many of them. I think you can get too many across there, and everybody expects them all to be exactly the same, and it's almost impossible. I've started pulling away on our backyards. I just give them one dead center of the door, and that's it, because that's all you need. You need your average across that thing, in my opinion. But Teltrues, who I lean on for those. I like the product. I like that they thread into a half inch OLED or half coupling, and they work well. I can see the need for an upper if you want it, you know, in your upper rack to get your ribs and things in. But I think across the bottom, I think you're good, you know, if you keep your eye on your meat. But the guy I work for daily never uses a thermometer in his smoker. Never has. He just has a feel for it. They just have a feel for it. And I'm more comfortable kind of seeing where I'm at, you know, through the cook. We did, we did 20 briskets a few weeks ago, and it was on a meal scale 1000, and it was even across the bottom, didn't have to move anything, but it's, I just like to know where I'm at through the cook. I don't think I could mentally not have a thermometer on that thing anywhere.
So I agree with you. Minimize the amount of information that they're having to figure out, you know? On some pits, like if I've never, like if it's a new design, like I'm using a different kind of baffle, or I'm wanting to jack around with my design and figure out like some new theory or something like that, I'll go digital and I'll stick some probes in there about 4 different spots, you know, and then compare that to the door. Man, you'll be shocked sometimes. You'll get totally different readings. What's going on? But at least if you have a reference mark and turn, like ignore the number, just turn it to where the dial's straight up where you like it.
Yeah.
Then they're all in tune.
Well, and if you'll ever mess with them, people that have touched and felt those, if you ever push the stem a little bit, the gauge moves. Mm-hmm. So if there's any defect at all anywhere, you're going to get false reading somewhere.
So here's a question here. Sieg's Small Batch Barbecue. What do you find is the most important design factor, and where do you come up with your volume figures? Some guys are, and some guys aren't. What do you think, Dustin?
I'm not. It's all feel. It's how much air I think needs to go through that thing. I've tried to plug some things into the Feltman's calculator or whatever it is, and I'm well over what they say I need, but I've got my little 250 doesn't draw like I think it should. But the last 500 I did, I could pull a log out 4 or 6 inches out, and it pulled everything back in. So
Yeah.
It's a feel thing for me because it takes getting, no matter how you build that unit, once you start using it and get your feel for it, how you want the damper on the stack, how you want your back baffle or your door opened, it's all part of the process to figure out where you need to be when you're cooking.
Yeah. So tell me a little bit about your discovery process on where you came up with, you just decided to do it that way. Because you mentioned Feldman's. I'm just curious how many hours you spent trying to knuckle through some calculations and then one day just how you chose.
I didn't. I plugged it in after the fact just to see if I was cleared.
Cool.
I didn't spend a lot of time on there. I came across that one day or some of these forums. I see people trying to use that calculator. And the square inches that I was probably double what I needed to go into that 250. And but it's all, like I say, it's all for the feel that you want there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, and it's so interesting to me about, you know, I always say there's no wrong way to do it. It's just the way that works for you and the way that works for your customers, honestly. I like the different styles and stuff like that. For instance, I have a plan right now that we're drawing that it's normally with our plans, like we stick very close to our rules that we've come up with for the beginning, you know, and we're breaking all the rules on this one. Well, the last one, we just broke all the rules. We did fully, it's not published yet, but it's completely and absolutely fully insulated cook chamber and all. It's rectangle. Oh, rectangle. I'm expecting problems, but the guy wants it that way. And so
I got you.
We're starting to get there now, you know, put the half a 250 on a 1,000 gallon tank and see what happens, you know.
Right.
Guys are building them that way and selling them for money and people are cooking on them. So it's not a matter of right or wrong. It's a matter of how is it working?
It's worked the way you want it to work.
Yeah. How do you feel about a 250 using that for 1,000 gallon? I know that you said you haven't built 1,000 yet, but you ran a mill scale and I don't know. I think they use a half a 250.
It is. Yeah, it's a half a 250 there with a liner on the inside pipe and it tends to work good. I don't know how some of them, I believe, use the 250 as what holds the wood. It's not, doesn't have the liner inside of that. But the 250, the length of it, everything, cause some people are front box, some are back. You got a lot of room. You got, well, that's a 7 foot tank. So you got 3'6" there to play with the depth of your fire. And I think that's a really good number.
Yeah. Yeah. I think there is something to that. You know, even just using the door as the air inlet, you know, like Sonny and some of those guys do, we did one pit that way and it worked great. I loved it, you know? So I'm going to have to play around with that a little bit here. Here's my buddy, Kevin. He just came through our welding school there. He says he saw my radius ruler that I use for plasma guide. What's your favorite homemade pit fab tool, Dustin?
Oh,
we all got something.
Yeah. I've got straight edges with levels clamped to it with another straight bar to get my center lines. Favorite thing I've got right now is a DeWalt laser that shoots me a laser line once I've got my tank leveled up. That's my favorite. Yeah. But as far as homemade, I've got countless jigs hanging on the wall and in that shop that I use for different things. My hinges are a piece of 035 welding wire in the shape that I want. And that's what I mock every one of them off of. I mean,
oh, that's cool.
Yeah. I mean, I've got all kinds of homemade stuff out there.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, we never used a laser level. I don't know why. We just never did. A cross laser level, by the way, is amazing. But we did a lot of things, you know, the hard way. And then one day Tom brought that thing in and said, by God, let's do it this way. And man, once you get it leveled up and you get that tank, that cook chamber level, and then you can set the firebox pitch off of that laser level, my goodness, it's game on at that point, especially with round fireboxes. I don't know how you would ever get everything to line up without it, you know. You can't use a string line. Maybe you could, but I don't know.
That ruler with some of the tanks, if they've modified any of the bung holes or anything on the top, you'll get a dip in it, so you've got to be sure to measure level end to end there at the caps, at the heads.
Yeah,
I had a small, I had a small little boiler tank. It was only 16 inch diameter, but I made it upside down. I had my firebox mounted to the chamber. Well, I'm leveling everything here, mm-hmm. and I flip it over, and it looks like my firebox is running uphill toward the back, and it, because it was out of shape a little bit, you know. So always look at your top side.
Yep, your top side, and then Tom and I always said too. We always told the guys in the shop. We said level it, you know, square it, level it, the whole bit. Stand back and look at it and go with your eye.
Yes.
Oh, because sometimes, yeah, like I've seen a firebox look crooked and yes, you set it on, you set it to a line, a chalk line, anything you want, and it's straight, but it looks crooked, you know? No, so we
always,
just wind up.
I always look at those eyes. I'll do that with grading. I won't level up all four corners. If I'm not on a table, if I'm on jack stands, I just squat down and look across. Because if you've got two lining up, the other two are going to line up with it. And I do a lot of that stuff by eye. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this guy right here, man, Ron Hardy, big, huge shout out to Ron. He's a cool dude. He built a gravity feed years ago, and his son's Cole Sweet Heat up out of St. Louis. But he's asking what gauge tubing you guys use for bending. So you were talking earlier, I think, about smaller tubing, but is it what wall thickness?
Yeah, you're 14 mm-hmm. gauge, 16 gauge, somewhere in there. Yeah, I wouldn't try to roll. 1/8 is going to try to crinkle up on. You might could do 1/8, but anything heavier than that's going to start bending sharp. It's not going to have any kind of a round to it. And when I say bend it, I'm talking mm-hmm. slightly bend it and work your way until it starts to round out. But like I said earlier, too, you have to be careful with it trying to roll out on you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you can also, that's something I need to mess with.
I've mm-hmm. seen guys take and slice it. They'll slice it like every 1 inch or half inch just on three sides of the tubing, roll it to the radius you want, weld all those seams back, grind it down. It kind of gives you the same look if you're going pretty tight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. Hey, here's another little pit builder shout out. I got two of them to do. Adam York, what's up, buddy? I'm so glad to see that you're back in the game, bro.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Took a little hiatus there for a little bit. Yeah, keep it up. And another one here, Red Devil. Got to give him a shout out. Good to see you guys on here.
He's got good stuff too.
Yeah. Let's see. We got another question here. Let's see what we got here. Holiday Lawrence, does it matter which side the firebox is mounted? Typically see on the right side. How do you feel? Like right side, left side? Is there a better best? Is there a reason?
I just had this conversation with a buddy just a couple of days ago. I'm right-handed, so I want to see it on the right. I want to work it to the right. Matt Leon with Smoke Game Strong, I just built his backyard. He's left-handed. He wanted to see the box on the left. It doesn't matter which way you do it. It's just all how you want it to look. Most of your pits mm-hmm. are going to be driver side on a trailer, but you'll get mm-hmm. them from time to time that want it over on the passenger side.
Yeah, like for street fairs or something.
Yeah, for
or
sure.
If for some reason they got to be on the sidewalk. Yeah.
Yeah.
I say the same thing. And then a lot of times, though, you'll have a lefty and a righty if you're in a pit room or something and you want the guy to be able to turn around or
for
something
sure.
like that. But as far as like operationally, I don't think it matters at all. It's just a matter of personal preference.
Right. Yeah. If you got a heavy wind coming out the opposite direction of your box, you know, you always tend to want to kind of flip that around anyway.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. What do you think about all these questions? I love it when they start hammering them in here. It's fun just to get different perspectives.
You've got me out of my comfort box here, Frank.
Do I really? That's fun, though. Let's see. Here's another one here. Question for both of you. On a traditional 250 offset, if you're using tuning plates, how far under the cooking grate do you run them? I've always said 3 inches or so is fine, 4 inches. But I think what Bill's asking is, like, if you have a rail under the cooking grates for an old school offset, like what David Close and them used to build or whoever it was, they put 6-inch and 8-inch plates with gaps in between them. That's what I do. What do you think?
That tends to make it a reverse flow, right, at some point?
Well, the stack is still on the offset.
I got you.
Yeah. Bigger gaps as you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. I get mm-hmm. several people too wanting to know if I build reverse flow, but I've never built one. I'm not comfortable doing it, so I stick to the traditional offset without any kind of plates in it.
I definitely, over time, I've started to go back to open offset. I've got a pit project I'm working on, kind of in the background. It's a production style pit, and I was going to involve both a vertical baffle, like we always talk about, and like I make everything go up as fast as I can, as soon as it comes out the throat. Or I'll use those tuning plates, but I'll be honest with you, I'm nixing both of those. I'm just going to make it wide open, and just letting it be wide open and let it cook. I mean, you'll get another completely different product. And you know, we threw down on a brisket. My buddy Aaron and I did this last weekend at the school there, and it was just on point, man. Butcher paper. I'm not a butcher paper guy. I'm just not a butcher paper guy. I never could pull it off, but you know, we took the brisket trimmings, we cut it all up into little tiny pieces, which that's something I was doing wrong, is I was putting the whole brisket fat in. You got to cut it up, and rendered the fat into tallow, did the whole bit, dude, dynamite. I'm so proud of that. It was good.
So we had a benefit for my dad just a month or so ago. And when we cooked those 20 briskets, well, some of them that were donated were super trim. So we took and sliced the fat like normal, like we're doing, trimming them up. We laid that on those super trim briskets that had no covering on them and did that. But we grinded up a ton of it and made tallow out of it. Same way. That's the first time I'd done that. That's an interesting process.
Yeah, don't burn it, I guess. I didn't know you could burn the fat. Like, we cooked it a little bit too long. It didn't get a bad smell. I think it just gets an off smell.
Right.
But yeah, Googly Moogly. One day I need to know his real name. He's all over my stuff on the YouTube here. I appreciate you, brother. You said, build some out of air tanks. How thick are they? Do people complain about them being thin? We have two air tanks, two 120s. Afraid they're too, they're not quarter. What is your experience with air tanks?
Most of them I've done are 3/16. You will get some, you'll get some spring in the door for sure on them. Mm-hmm. And I'll take little turnbuckles and I'll pull them in, get them like set like I want, get my bars in, pull them off. But I like them. I don't know how long they'll last. You know, they've got to last 10, 20 years, I'm sure. But yeah, they're definitely going to be thinner. Now, there's some people will bring me a tank and they might be a Campbell Hossfield or some kind of a Walmart type air tank, and they're less than 3/16. They're 1/8. Those are made for air. I wouldn't use those tanks for anything else.
Yeah. I've actually cut into it. The last couple 120 gallon propane tanks I did were thinner than 3/16.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It seems like they were more like 10 gauge, not 12. They were right at, or a little more than 1/8, but, they were thin. And you're right. Them doors spring like the Dickens.
And as far as if he's interested in building one, be careful where you're welding. You know, skip around. Mm-hmm. Don't weld in one area too long to try to avoid some of that warping.
Yeah. Stop on a start. That's what Bob told me. And once he told me that, it was totally different game. When much as you can anyway, when you're skipping around. Yeah, stop your bead on a start. Any winners show up? Actually, he's asking about the $4,000 giveaway I did with the welder and everything. And yes, there's the second place winner has not claimed, but the first and the third did claim. So, by the way, the only way that you know is you got to go to your email and you got to check your email and look in your spam folder too. Sometimes it'll be in there. If you're watching, we usually let it go for a couple of 3 weeks. And if the prizes aren't claimed, then we'll rehash them for the next giveaway. So, Shane Mink actually won first place, and he's got a whole lot of stuff coming to him. So let's see, Dave Taylor, what you got there, bro? I'm considering changing careers from mechanical design to pit builder. Any words of wisdom for a newbie? What do you think, Dustin, about the transition period? You're not really there full time yet, but kind of go into it all.
He's got the mechanical background. He should be able to get him some pits built for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say,
go ahead.
No, go ahead.
All right. I was just going to say, I would take it easy and I would go slow into it. And like Green Money Fab said on his episode, he said, don't overtool. If you're willing to start the process, one way you can do is make sure you get your money right first. If you're serious about going full time, if you're going to make the transition, if the reason most businesses fail is not because of money, it's because they didn't build enough pits fast enough at prices high enough and that kind of thing. And what winds up happening is if you don't start out early, it's not the money you have when you get started. It's the money you have throughout the process of building those first 10 pits. And if you don't capitalize properly during that process, you'll wind up, having a, it won't be fun to always be working hard and scared of the money. So, any thoughts on that part of it, Dustin?
I would definitely say take it slow. Use what you got. Mm-hmm. Don't get a bunch of stuff to, don't overthink it. Just get you some simple builds out and go from there.
Yeah, I don't really think that you should go full time until you've got 10 builds under your belt in 1 year. I just kind of been thinking about that a lot. I mean, because the amount of energy to do 10 builds in 1 year, I mean, that's a high commitment level. That's a high level of work to be able to hold down a full time job, especially if you're a fabricator like yourself, Dustin. You're burning a lot of hours and there's overtime more than likely. Until you can pull off those 10 builds, and do them at a reasonable rate, not cheap, do them cheap, because you're shooting yourself in the foot. What about pit pricing? I mean, we never talk about that. I mean, how do you feel about pit pricing? Do you feel like, we always used to say back in the day before steel went nuts, we always said $3 a pound is what we would say for your retail price. Do you have any kind of like rule of thumb? You don't have to reveal the hard stuff, but
I do it in my regular job. When we quote jobs, I try to think about how long it's going to take me to do something and how much do you want per hour? I try to break it down into that time. Are you going to have somebody helping you? I try to break it down in that. I don't really go by prices. Now I have my prices now that I know how long it takes to do something. But I've always tend to break it down per hour, and how quick I want to do it.
Yeah. It's definitely a matter of making sense out of how much money you need in order to justify doing it, to get your goals and your dreams hit for sure. I'm going to show this one here real quick. It says Wazy, I think I got my glasses off. How do you calculate your throat size? Well, I cheat and use a calculator is how I do it. I use bbqpitcalculator.com, but also there's Feldon's as well. And we're both pretty close on that number. What do you do though on your end of it, Dustin?
I don't have anything scientific at all. I kind of get a feel for it. Usually I'll leave me a lip on the bottom of my tank to make sure I get no grease going back into my fire pit. And then normally I'll look at kind of height, kind of the same deal, get back and look at it. It's just some of it's trial and error for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. This next one here from Richard, I think we're both probably going to say the same thing. He's asking about the rusty, man, they're pounding us with questions. I love it. the head of the tank, like if there's a whole bunch of divots in it, do you spot weld them and stuff? Do you fill all that in or do you just let nature show?
Let it show. I keep bringing up Texas Made because it's one of the best patinaed ones I've got, and it's got a huge dent in the side of it. So he just says a meteor hit it. So that's all you got to do. I didn't even cover it up.
That's a story.
That's a conversation starter.
Yep. Let the story show. I like that a lot. Here we go. Ken Rietsma was the third prize winner there. He got, he didn't get the welder, but he got a freaking nice hood and a whole bunch of Blue Demon gear. Congrats there, Ken. Nice. Appreciate you. He's got a ticket to the welding class too. Boom, tick, tick. How you doing, bro? Good to see you on here. Googly Moogly here. He's back again. Let's see what he's got to say. He says, I'm scared to overcharge people. I lack the confidence to tell people my work is worth thousands of dollars. Actually, what I recommend on that, I'll just throw mine in here, is don't talk about price. Talk about value first. Every one of these pits is very unique. They can't just go down the store to buy them. you know, your work in particular is very unique. So my vote is sell it based on the value and the experience that you can give your customer. Let them figure out the price later. They either are serious or they're not. You know, what do you think, Dustin?
Yeah, and I don't know if this guy's a pit builder or a welder at all, but it there comes a time where you don't need it for practice anymore. You're trying to make a living.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you know, the thing is that as scarce as it is, I mean, I don't know how far you're backed out, but the industry, you know, normal is more than 6 months. Typically, if you're full time, closer to 2 years. As scarce as it is to even get a pit, you know, they're butting ahead of line. If you're going to build a one, right, if you have it in the next 3 months, it's worth it. Every penny you would charge.
Yeah, for sure.
Someone will pay it, especially, you know, like I don't think there should be a pit built for, you know, less than $9,000. I think they all should be higher than that right now, just because of the price of steel, you know, the amount of stuff we all got going on, things like that. I know for 1,000 gallon, we're, you know, between $15,000 and $20,000 right now,
right?
Just depending on the complexity of it. So there's no sense in leaving money on the table unless you're just doing it for fun, you know, which is fun making money. So I don't know. I sure like to have money. So
You got to enjoy what you do too.
Absolutely. So we're still getting hammered with questions here, but I want to talk to you a little
bring
bit
them.
More.
All right.
So how long have you been in the barbecue, on the barbecue scene? Like as far as cooking and stuff like that?
I mean, we've always cooked all over the years, but just since May, really last May, I've been kind of in this industry. I've met tons of people. This is one of the most tight knit communities I've ever been in. And they all take care of each other. It's not like when you go anywhere, this is not my competitor. This is my buddy. You know, it's everybody's friendly. Everybody's in the same game. It's like old Cooper Abercrombie told me one time, the pie is so big, everybody can have a slice. It's not, you're not, there's so much. I mean, I probably have 25 to 30 quotes right now that need to go out. There's so many people involved with barbecue. It's unreal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. There's definitely no shortage of customers out there.
Right.
You know, like I was even talking about buying some burger presses from you, you know, because it's not just a smoker and getting the best deal anymore. It's who built it.
Right.
You know, like a guy's going to go out and buy a pit from this guy. And then a couple years later, he's going to go out and buy another pit from another guy. And it's a collection now. It's gone to that, you know, we're not just satisfying the need for a smoker. So the competitive nature of getting someone, it's like barbecue rub. I tell the barbecue rub guys this all the time. I have got chicken fried in my cabinet. I got Oak Ridge in my cabinet. I got, you know, you name them, TDs. I got, you know, Sweet Swine of mine. I got a lot of brands in my cabinet. Malcolm Reed's in there. You know, all these different guys are in my cabinet at home. And I wouldn't have it any other way. And it's kind of getting to be the same way with smokers, I think.
Yeah.
You know, so
I know lots of people with several different
as well.
Right. I know lots of them that have several different kinds. You know, John down in Interstellar's got a mill scale. He's got a Moberg. He's got one that a friend of his built. I mean, it's a collector, you know. You know, you brought up the burger presses. You brought up the burger presses again. So another community that's brought into us here is the Blackstone guys, the guys that are cooking on their Blackstone on their back porch. They're, you know, some of the top buyers of this thing. So that kind of ties burners to the flat top guys and even some of the Traeger guys, you know?
I'm really having a hard time because I want to buy a Blackstone like something bad. But see, the deal is that I build that stuff. So it's like I'm really having a hard time justifying purchasing a Blackstone when I could just build me a coal-fired one or something, you know, or
came from the same, you know, like my dad, and when we were growing up, if you needed something, you built it, you know, you didn't just go out and buy it. So that's kind of how I've always been. My wife and I first got married. I built our furniture. I built our entertainment center. I mean, you built it. You didn't buy it.
Yeah, that's something, man. Well, I tell you what, Dustin, I'm super glad that you joined me here on this deal tonight. And, you know, I hate to cut it short. I am at a conference and I got to get back downstairs. But I'll tell you what, give the guys some information here. This is going to be on our YouTube channel, you know, forever. So give them some information about how to get a hold of you, like your website and, you know, your Instagram handle and stuff.
All right. You can can find us on the web at MuleSkinnerSmokeRigs.com. We're also on Instagram at Mule Skinner Smoke Rigs. Look us up on Facebook, TikTok. What else are we on? I think that's it. That's it.
Yeah. And you're down in one more time where you're located and where do you ship if you build a pit? Where who can get it?
I've got one going to Montana. You there? I've got one going to Montana.
Yeah, we're here.
Yeah, I've got a guy that's coming out of California that does hot shot rigs. That's going to come pick it up and take it. And I usually leave that to the customers to get it shipped or if they want to come pick it up or whatever. Mm-hmm. But I would say the lower 58 here would be plenty good.
Yeah, that's cool. Right on, fellas. Well, I tell you what, I'm excited for the next one as well. I've got a buddy of mine lined up to talk about paint. I don't know how you guys all feel about that, but tune in next week. This guy's a pro. Paint, powder coat, the whole bit. So, Dustin, I appreciate you being on the show, and I can't wait to see what comes out of your shop next, bro.
Thank you, sir. And thank you, Frank, for all that you do for this whole community too, buddy.
I appreciate it. It's my pleasure. We'll see you guys. Have a great weekend.
All right. See you.